Welcome back to another episode of a podcast written by a software engineer. I'm your host, Perrin. Today, we're going to talk about the two pizza teams. What does that even mean? Are we even talking about software engineering nowadays? But fun fact, though, before we get into that, joined with me today is Stan and Andy. Stan, how are you doing?
I'm good.
And what about you, Andy?
Hey.
So now the question is, do you guys know what the two pizza team is? Stan, what does that even, like, tell you?
It's kind of to help you guide how large a team should be. I think it's used to kind of describe that a product team shouldn't normally be larger than what two pizzas could feed.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's true, but this was infamously coined by Bezos, if I'm not mistaken, is that at some point at Amazon, that's how they kind of gauge the size of a team. So definitely the topic today is definitely figuring out what an engineering team should look like, at least in the software world, and especially how this is important. Because when you talk about two pizzas, feeding enough people with two pizzas, that's generally around maybe 10 people. I think that's fair to say. And then just trying to figure out, is that effective in the long run? Why can't we have teams of like 50 people? Why can't we have a single engineering team of 50 people compared to a single engineering team of like two people, for example? So I think over the years, if you work in tech, that's one of the topic that people like talking about, especially people who are responsible of making these teams, trying to figure out in bigger organizations how they would actually work. So that's definitely what we're going to be diving into. But what is your opinion on two pizza teams, Andy? Do you believe in it? Do you believe that every team should be that kind of range of size? Or do you think that's just something that people in tech world are just making it sound cool and fun because we're talking about two pizza teams over here?
I think that definitely makes sense to me. I agree with that because I think there's like an upper bound to how big a team can be, or at least how big an effective team could be. And the two pizza concept makes sense to me.
Yeah, and speaking of, actually, if we talk about our own history in terms of, I keep on loving this phrase, between us we have more than a decade, even maybe two decades of years of experience in software engineering. We've fortunately been in different kind of engineering teams, and even sometimes you work on your own projects, you're a team of one as well. So I guess in your experience, though, real quickly, what's the smallest size of team that you've ever worked in, and what's the biggest size of engineering team that you've worked with, just so that we have a comparison in terms of how much we've lived this two pizza team experience?
I think for me, like, the smallest size is definitely just one by myself. I think oftentimes when you're working on an early startup, you both kind of take on the role of a product manager to a degree, plus the engineer. So you're kind of speccing and implementing to a degree. And I think on the upper bound, I'd say probably the current size of the platform team at Notable is, what, seven? Probably around seven people, mm-hmm. which is probably the largest that I've been in.
And there's definitely a big difference between one person on team versus seven. So we'll definitely dive into that. What about you, Andy?
Yeah, I think the smallest team I worked at was at a startup where it was only me and another engineer. And then the largest is probably the one that I'm at right now, where the engineering org is 30 people.
On a single team? Well, yeah, there's a lot of engineering. But if we talk about specifically like people that you work immediately with, that co-review your stuff and you get to ping questions, I guess that's the range we're looking at. Is that still 30 or is it another upper bound?
How many people are on the integrations team?
It's like 15 or 16 people, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, you guys split it up into like different
into
pods,
into smaller
right?
pods, yeah. Like the yeah. pods are around like five each, basically.
Hmm. See, even this concept is already interesting. When we're talking about splitting to smaller pods, this actually brings us to the terminology, because I know whether you are in tech or not in tech, you get to hear a lot of different concepts. Two pizza teams, the Boy Scout rule, that's the one that people keep on throwing about. We could have totally a different episode on the Boy Scout rule. But then when we talk about terminologies related to engineering teams and related to two pizza teams, you threw one out there, pods. Pods is basically just a smaller group of individuals. Are they all engineers or are they a mix of everything as well?
Typically, there's a mix. I mean, the bulk of them are going to be engineers because someone has to do the engineering work, but typically there is a lead that can be from the product team.
All right, so that's another role that we already threw out there. So there's also, I think over the years of working in tech, like people use the word pods, people use the word nodes. I think some very niche people, like these nodes of teams that of engineering in some organizations. Squads is another one. I think guilds doesn't really refer to a single pod. I think guild is like multiple pods form a guild, and then they have like multiple guilds within an organization. So one of the thing that if people are interested, you could definitely Google all this, and I think Spotify has a really good chart of how they kind of sort all this out. But I think from our experience, I've personally, the smallest team I've worked at was probably, I think, two people. I think we were just two people. I was doing a lot of front end work and the other person was doing all the back end and design for some reason. And we're just crushing stuff out. And then the bigger teams I've worked on is probably always around the size of maybe like 6 to 7 to 8. That's usually the upper bound. But I don't think it's uncommon that there are teams out there that around maybe like 10 people, and those still fall in the realm of two pizza teams at the end of the day, because I think you could still, I guess, feed 10 people with two pizzas. We might have to drop the pizza concept for a little bit. Let's talk about the actual composition of two pizza teams. You already threw out there, you got the engineers, but even within engineers, you could split that, right? You could have like the individual contributors, but you also have like some other roles that are super important. Engineering managers, for example, they don't fully directly add code day to day, but they are definitely part of the pod, part of the squad, part of the actual smaller engineering team, and they definitely do contribute a lot. And we talk about PMs, when we talk about designers, talk about data analysts, we could definitely jump into the bit where, I guess, we could also start listing the roles that are not part of a two pizza team, sorry. Actually, if I ask you now real quickly before we dive into that, what is not part of a two pizza team, Andy?
Anyone outside of product and engineering? It's a pretty broad question, yeah.
What is not part of a two pizza team? Well, I think the two pizza team concept really just tells you that you probably shouldn't have more than, again, 8 to 10 people on a team, like actively communicating, because at that point the cost of communication becomes very expensive. I don't think it prescribes really anything about like the composition of who's actually on the team. I think that's probably very dependent on like what that team is functionally supposed to achieve, right? Like if you're working on a highly technical product, that team could mostly be composed of engineers. Yet if it's maybe more of like a data type product or feature that team is supporting, maybe you have more data analysts or like data engineers. So I think the composition can vary quite a bit.
I definitely love that we have different contexts. So one of the contexts is product engineering, where you're developing a lot of features like directly into that. So definitely the composition of that team is very different to somebody working on a security team, for example. They have maybe a different composition, or even infrastructure team. They have like a lot of site reliability engineers, and they definitely have different composition between, do they even need a designer on those teams if they don't really have any front work? That could, or maybe they have more emphasis on like architecture in terms of like tech architecturing the whole thing. So that's another great topic that we are going to dive into just a bit. One thing I want to pull back actually is when we're talking about the why the two pizza teams, one thing you mentioned is that you really want to emphasize good communication. And when you have more than 15, 20 people, that's when it gets a little bit hard, right? What are the, I guess, other benefits of having a smaller size team other than better communication?
I mean, that's basically the only thing that I can think of, because like, yeah, if you have a smaller team, communication is better, but you're not going to be as effective because stuff like less man hours.
Yeah, that's true. I like the communication because one of the, I guess, popular complaint is that most of the time one team does stand up together, right? And then if ever your team gets like insanely big, you'll have like 20 people doing all stand up together, and everybody's in the stand up for like half an hour to an hour every single day. So that's like a direct example of why you don't want the big teams. One thing that I've seen over the years is the product. For example, when you're breaking down a product, does it make sense that you should break up your teams with the product? So imagine that you have a team initially, and the teams grow no matter what. They go from like 5 people, 10 people, 15. At what point do you start splitting them? Is it because they work on different projects, that's when you pull them out in different teams? Or are there other factors why you would encounter breaking out these teams? Because that's kind of the reason why we have smaller teams nowadays.
The two pizza concept basically gives a very good reason to break it up, just by like number of people. Because like one person or like whoever their management or lead is, like they can only effectively manage so many people. So at one point, it's just not going to work anymore. Like if a manager has like 20 reports, he's probably not going to be able to do a good job.
Yeah, if we consider the time spent on actually looking at the team and figuring out what the team is supposed to do, I guess that's a fair point in that case. So is there anything that you wanted to add in terms of why we break down teams? Why when we grow to like 50 engineers and we can't have them in a single team, what are some factors that people that do make these decisions of breaking these teams will take into consideration?
I can't think of any additional reasons aside from like the increased cost of communication. It's just like if you had a task to do, and that task was broken up into 5 components, it's much easier for you to kind of orchestrate how to execute those 5 tasks just by yourself. And by introducing another person, that is essentially adding to the complexity of communication. Within your mind, it's really easy to communicate. Like the cost of communication there is really low. As you add additional people to like this graph and you all need to communicate with each other, the complexity just increases. And I think it increases potentially exponentially, not in a linear fashion most of the time. So I think that's why you really want to cap it around you know, I guess this idea of around 8 or 10.
And I kind of like that when you're talking about this graph. In my head, it's always been like a tree or like something that has a node at the top. And that's usually like if you think about an organization, that kind of how it builds. There's a lot of individuals at the end nodes where all these teams sit in, and then those get reported to one person. And a lot of organization structure kind of revolves around that. Not just in tech, sorry. Just like if you think about whatever, the military, they have a lot of ranks like this. And I feel like there's some kind of parallel between how those are organized and how those teams actually...
I do think like having like a more top-down structure can be more efficient. It's definitely more efficient than like, I guess, more of a democratic communication style where like everyone has an equal opinion. Oftentimes, if you can just say, you know, A and B, you guys handle these tasks, and then they are able to delegate and split out their tasks, like the tasks that you gave them into like smaller subcomponents to individuals, like this is much more effective than saying everyone has an equal piece and we should all try and figure out what's the best way to coordinate and achieve this task. I do think there is a difference between those communication styles, and it is one that, you know, but like the downside is if you have someone that's really bad at the top of the tree, you know, that cascades down as well.
That's the one thing that I could point out is that over the years, you hear about this like miscommunication, not from one level to another, it's between levels, where sometimes the communication doesn't flow as well just because you have the team or whatever, and then you have another layer above, and then you have another layer above, and that sometimes people are unhappy about that. Is it something that like you agree with, that like the benefits that you get for having these smaller broken down teams and just having maybe this distance communication outweighs the negative part of sometimes, you know, communication is harder between layers?
Do people usually communicate up? Most of the time I imagine communication is downwards, right? Like you say, you should execute on this. And you're not really able, I mean, of course you can have some amount of conversation with, you know, your superior, but oftentimes in this more tree-like structure, communication only flows one way, which is why it decreases complexity, as opposed to like, again, more of a graph where like if everyone has an equal weight and everyone can influence everyone else's opinion on how to do things, that graph is significantly more complex, right? So the cost of communication in that graph is like more complex than this tree structure, which is like unidirectional.
That's fair, yeah.
I would say most of the time. Otherwise, if you have a tree that allows you to kind of propagate your ideas up, you're kind of back up to the graph idea, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's not really a tree anymore.
I think what's great about this is that like the importance of communication, it's definitely undisputed. I had nothing to say against how important communication is within an organization, within even just individuals. I think that'll just matter. And funny enough, when we talk about software, people think like technology, whatever, but at the end of the day, you can have great technology, but if that's not communicated properly between all layers, then we'll have a little bit of trouble on that. One thing that could be quite fun actually is when we talk about our experience in two pizza teams, we've been on different kinds of pizza teams, I guess, or different kind of engineering teams. If we talk about different roles, what composes a team? Like from the outside, a lot of people being like, oh, you're part of a team. Like you as an engineer, you're part of a team. But then like, what was your role contributing to that team? What do you fit in that team specifically? I can speak for myself, at least in the past couple of years, I've been very fortunate to touch all the different parts of a stack. When you're talking about like the database, the back end and the front end, building stuff on the front end, that's always been fun. And I think that's one of the more significant role I've done in different engineering teams I've worked with. So if we talk about specific examples, I would very often work really closely to designers, for example. They'll give you designs and then we're going to be on the same team. And then depending on if your feature requires something from a backend engineer, then you'll be working closely with another backend engineer. So that's a very fairly common role I've been in over the past couple of years. Do you guys have any examples of like, other than you yourself on the engineering team, how did that synergy look like when you work on any two pizza teams out there?
I think like you might want to break it up depending on the team that you're on. Like I think at least at Notable, we have mostly product-centric teams. Right. We don't really have functional teams. The exception is like maybe the ML team. Of course, like those members they're kind of delegated out to like product vertical teams. I think if you look a couple of years ago, like maybe 10, 20 years ago, people mostly structured their teams around like more functional teams, like, oh, you're a team of backend engineers, right? And there are like no front end people there. And like, you're the team of front end engineers, you're the team of like QA people. And I think like, at least in my experience, I've mostly worked on product-centric teams, and my role has been primarily to work on back-end stuff. But like you said, especially when you're working for earlier startups, you know, that role is somewhat fluid. You kind of fit whatever you need to get done.
Wearing a lot of different hats. We could all definitely relate in the past couple of years of wearing all kinds of hats. So let's put the focus on the contributors first, the individual contributors on a team. And then we could definitely expand on the other roles, because when we talk about a team composition, there's more than a handful of different roles from everybody. So as I was saying, over the years, product development, that's always a very common role as an engineer, as an individual contributor, is when you build features, when you push out code and you write code, and then those get shared upon. If we talk about the composition of it real quickly, is what would you expect from an engineering team percentage-wise of how many of them are individual contributors? Is it 50%? Is it 90%? Given 10 people, let's say you have a team of 10 people on an engineering team, how many of those individuals are individual contributors who write code and push code and deploy code?
Should be at least like 9 or 8. Like, it should be the bulk of it, because, yeah, I mean, like the other people aren't really going to contribute towards pushing out features.
And that's fair, yes. Then, similar...
I think it's very dependent on, again, the problem that you're solving, like your team makeup. If the feature is very front-end heavy, the makeup might be more front-end. If you're trying to enhance like a feature, maybe you actually need more data analysts to gather like more context to make the decisions on what to actually build like in the future. It really varies depending on like what you're actually trying to achieve, and like even across the life cycle of a product or a feature, like that makeup could also change, right? Like you probably need more engineers from the 0 to 1 phase, but once you're trying to get 1 to 10, potentially you need more people to do analysis on like, mm-hmm. you know, what are like the things that we need to improve upon to get this to the next level to scale. So it's really hard to say. I would say one thing would be like, you probably don't want too many product managers working on this. Like, you want one kind of head deciding what to actually do. Like, these are like the things that we should work on, and potentially, you know, the people feeding that information or that context to make that decision could be like data analysts or like CSMs. And then you probably at least need a couple people to implement it, but it really depends on like how complex the things you're implementing are.
Yeah, because one thing I can at least picture in my mind is that every time I talk about an engineering team, at least 50% of the people on the team has to be engineers. Like, I don't see a team where you have less individual contributors than every, in quotes, peripherals of contributing that feature. So that's something that I'd love to be told wrong, but every engineering team that I've at least witnessed, seen, or like work remotely closely enough, there's always been a good chunk of them that has to be engineers at the end of the day. I'm trying to find reasons why it wouldn't be like that, but I'll leave it for somebody else to prove me wrong on it. And one thing that's actually quite interesting is if we talk about this subsection of the engineering teams, if we talk about just the individual contributors, they all have different, I guess, years of experience. Or is that even true? What's the ideal composition, I guess? If you had to build a team of engineers, do you want like only top tier, everybody has like 10 plus years of pure IC contribution? Or is it reasonable to always like consider like maybe it's good to have younger people there to embrace the experience as well? Because I know like in the big picture, you have, yes, we're talking about one team, but it might impact other stuff. So do you have any opinion on seniority within a single team?
I would prefer a pretty mixed set of people with like varying seniority levels. But then if it were up to me, I would probably go for a team that probably has more junior engineers than senior engineers. I think that's a pretty good balance, because junior engineers are typically very good at doing, and senior engineers are typically very good at thinking things through. And I think like having a balance where there's a little bit more doers than thinkers is good.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why you get these kind of descriptions as tech leads or like more senior. What about your opinion on that, Stan?
I think there's definitely truth to what Andy says, but it also is highly contextual. It depends on the product that you're working on. If you're working on a highly technical product that, you know, most junior people should not be attempting, like you probably, even if you have a bunch of junior people that are very eager, they might actually be moving you in the opposite direction, and that can happen without like the proper guidance. So in that case, even if you are moving more slowly with more senior engineers, it might still be beneficial to, you know, have a team makeup of, you know, more senior engineers. Though I do think for most like web dev type projects, you know, maybe like one senior to every like two or three juniors seems like a decent makeup from what I've seen. I also think there's like also another dimension that is maybe correlated to seniority, but there's definitely like a headstrongness that exists within or in a certain people that are highly opinionated on how things should be done. And I think you also want to take this dimension into consideration. You do not want too many headstrong people on the same team, especially if they have oftentimes conflicting opinions. This can also like derail a team quite quickly, and I've seen this happen in my career. So while it does sound nice to hire a bunch of senior people, it's like, oh, of course, they're just better engineers. Oftentimes you do also run into like senior engineers are more likely to be opinionated on how to do things, and then, you know, if they start fighting, that could be a bad situation.
What about headstrong junior engineers? I'm kidding. Well, I mean, do you have an opinion on that? Have you seen that happen before?
Oh, I've definitely seen headstrong junior engineers for sure. But oftentimes, like if there's also a headstrong senior engineer and they actually respect that engineer, they will, I've most of the time seen them fall in line. But again, if they don't respect the experience or like the opinions, whether they're junior or senior, like it doesn't really matter. Like they'll fight, and then that'll become an issue. And oftentimes you just need to separate them and put them on different teams.
Yeah, and that does happen. As in, like, over the years, you do see people changing from one engineering team to another, whether it was for that reason or not, but that does happen. And that the whole goal is to have better teams at the end of the day. The whole goal is that the team you work with is enjoyable and you get to work with different people.
Debatable. So I think the, like the output oftentimes is just like, or is this team productive or not? Enjoy, like, whether someone you can actually retain someone probably is, you know, a factor into that is, you know, whether it's enjoyable to be on that team. But I think at least from like a business perspective, like the end metric that they're optimizing for is like, are they able to like deliver on the feature sets that we want?
Yeah. And that definitely affects composition. If the effect is that like this product needs to be technical and high, then of course you want as many senior engineers on there or like knowledgeable engineers on there. And then different contexts where it's a product that it will grow in the future and you want to scale and you want to have like more younger engineers so that you have good influence on many of them. That works. I think the one rule that we agree on is that don't have an engineer team started with only junior engineers. I think that's one of the things that we could all agree on.
I mean, if some of the junior engineers are like, again, like very good, like you can be good and be on the more junior side. And if it's okay for them, their lack of experience like does not affect the stability of the product.
I was gonna say, yeah, critical,
as much. Critical. Like that's completely okay. I actually think like, especially when you're viewing it from like an organizational standpoint, you have to also consider budget, right? Like senior engineers are also generally more expensive to hire. If you have a limited budget, you need to allocate your resources effectively. There may be teams that you want to, you know, maybe use less experienced people for because you can actually handle it.
And not as available sometimes, just because there's never going to be enough senior engineers out there to
solve. Yeah, it's hard to find good people.
One thing that I could speak from my experience of working on different engineering teams is pair programming. I've always enjoyed, most of the time you pair program with somebody on your team as opposed to somebody, I mean, sometimes depending on projects, you will have some cross-team pair programming. But over the years of working on these different engineering teams, when we're relating back to, oh, how many senior engineers do we have or how many people that are younger or like interns that come in, one thing that shaped me a lot for sure is that on most teams that I've worked on, I've been quite fortunate there's always somebody more intelligent than I am. Mostly because I'm never the smartest person on any team at the end of the day, but one thing that did shape me overall is having somebody that I could learn from no matter what. So I do want to emphasize that no matter how I look at teams, there should always be an individual that another individual could always look up to, whether it's because they have more years or whether because they just know a topic better than another person. Those are some of the overlaps that do happen. For you guys though, do you like having, how do you call this, like a bus factor? My biggest concern a lot of this time is that like when you rely somebody so much, like you have, let's say out of the 10 engineers, you have 7 engineers, but you have like one silo, this one engineer that knows everything about that. How do you guys feel about that? How do you guys think will impact if ever the bus factor does happen? And what are some ways to prevent that? Just an asterisk real quickly. The bus factor is basically having a very single silo of knowledge and information. And if they get taken out by a bus, knock on wood, usually all the knowledge information is lost within that single node. Any opinions on that?
Yeah, I definitely don't like that. Like basically having a 10xer that you would rely on heavily on the team, because like that adds a lot of like risk to the organization because of basically just what you said. If there is like a bus factor situation where maybe this person gets injured or for whatever reason they can't work anymore, like that's going to be quite a hurdle to overcome.
Are there any good ways of preventing it, Stan, or some ways that you've seen people, at least like a framework so that it happens very not often where?
The bus factor is good for you if you're the one that's getting hit by the bus and like, well, not actually physically hit by the bus, but, you know, that's more leverage for you. That's an IC, but obviously from a managerial standpoint, you do not want that because you want your team to persist even if, you know, this person is taken out. What was the question that you had?
Is there any way to prevent this from happening?
Oh, yeah. Just general knowledge sharing. Oftentimes, like, this happens all the time. When you join a company, you gain context over time, and then eventually you become, or sometimes you become very important because you have all this context in your mind. Eventually, you need to actually share this context because, you know, you want to go on vacation and you don't want to be on call. So you just have to invest time into sharing this knowledge with other people. And I think it's very hard to find one other person who can do everything that you do. So oftentimes you need to actually kind of distribute your knowledge across like multiple people, improve like the resiliency of your team in that manner.
That's actually really cool because one word you put out there is intentional, I think. Bus factor is not always intentional. It just happens that like, it's just this streak of projects that this person I've worked with that amassed so much knowledge that you have to actively find a way to solve that problem, basically. And this is one part of the software engineering world that not many people get to hear about. A lot of people talk about, like, you know, the code that this team put out there. But then there's all this other side of the engineering ops side of trying to find a way to make sure that data lives on, whether it's some person that they leave the company or some person that's not available for an extended period of time because they're on holiday. I remember there was a week where I was on a team where we were three people and two of them went on holiday. And I was like, yep, I'm not deploying anything for this week just so that nothing happens in that case. I don't know if it's directly related to bus factor, but that's something I remember at that time. One of the measures is just don't deploy anything if that doesn't work in that case. So,
yeah, maybe like a mini bus. You got hit by a small one. It takes you out for a week or two.
That's another layer of stuff you got to think about. Bus factors, mini bus factors, all that. One thing that we could tie this with is when we talk about these processes and making sure that none of this happens, somebody has to think about this. Somebody has to do this. Is it fair to say most of the time it's the engineering manager or like the tech lead or the tech architect that has to think about this? Like whose responsibility is it to, you know, prevent these issues from popping up?
I mean, it's mainly up to the lead or the manager, but then everyone on the team should be an effective steward and kind of try to catch these, even if they're just a IC.
Yeah, I think the ultimate responsibility falls under the jurisdiction of the manager. Like, and again, like a tech lead can help with that, like individual, you know, engineers beneath the tech lead, like, can also help with that. But if you had to blame someone at the end of the day, it's probably the manager if it is not this problem, like actually becomes an active problem.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to point out is, let's talk about numbers. How many engineering managers per team? I think over the years, I'm going to say I've never seen a team with more than one engineering manager. Just because when we're talking about, let's say there's 10 individuals, around, let's say 7 of them are ICs. Two questions here is, how many EMs have you seen on average, I guess, for any engineering teams? And the second is, would you consider them as part of the ICs or not part of the ICs?
I mean, that depends on like which level of team we're looking at. I think if we're looking at a team where it's just fully ICs and not a group of teams or a team of teams, I think one makes sense. And I would say they're definitely separate from the ICs just because of the work that they do.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with that bit where it's like over the years, I think if you're an EM, it's rare that you get lobbed into the IC bit just because I guess the tasks for engineering managers are, when we talk about these operations problems, or even talking about like the other stuff that happens, career progression and everything that involves not touching code directly, it's fairly agreed that most engineering managers are not loved as part of the IC's percentage of distribution within an engineering.
Well, that's not entirely true. Like, it really depends on where you are, like how your team operates. Like, someone, like, if you think of an engineering manager as like a bundle of responsibilities, you can always take on that set of responsibilities, and you can also take on more responsibilities after that, and like, you can still be an IC and contribute. And an example is that Notable generally, like, since we're still growing and we're kind of transitioning into this a more structured organization, I think there's a good set of engineering managers who also still contribute to the code base. And it really depends on your philosophy as an engineering manager as well. Some people actually do think that you should continually try to stay active and really understand like the pain points of like the engineers on their teams, so they still do like to, you know, contribute to the code base. I think it's a set of people who, it's not like a unified theory, or like, I guess, an idea that where everyone has consensus that engineering managers should never code. I think that's a misconception, though it is an idea that's thrown around a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely a good point of conversation, because when you have engineering managers who do get to contribute on the code base, one of the things that might be confusing is, how is that different than a tech lead? Or like, if we have to fit in this distribution of people, you have ICs and then you have EMs and you also have tech leads. Are you throwing tech leads within the ICs, or can tech leads also be engineering managers? Like, how would you distinguish between an engineering manager and a tech lead to somebody that hears about an engineering team for the first time ever?
Well, an engineering manager is a people person, and a tech lead is a tech person. So, like, I would lump the tech lead in with the IC side, since typically tech leads don't have direct reports.
I think, like, all this is, like, you do want to think of it as, like, again, a tech lead traditionally has a set of responsibilities. Their responsibilities are to, like, help individuals on the team, like, architect certain things. They're supposed to provide technical guidance. So you can do that, and you can also provide, like, people management guidance. Like, so you can really kind of pick and choose what responsibilities traditionally fall under each of these, like, the umbrellas of each of these titles. And again, like, as an IC, your responsibility is to write code and, like, you know, push out features. So really, you could kind of, you can almost make your own role. And I guess in the end, like, you can kind of, you have to, like, generally you are given a title, but you can really kind of pick and choose your own role. And especially at earlier companies, this is really what people are doing. Like, they don't just say, like, oh, I'm an IC, therefore I can never architect anything. Someone must give me every single spec before I start any work. Yeah.
I like this overlap that you're mentioning, because it is 100% true that over the course of being a software engineer, over your career, you will be touching all these different kind of roles. Whether you're officially or not officially called a tech lead or an engineering manager or something, these set of responsibilities or these like roles that do pop up, you will encounter it, whether it's actually your title or not. I guess it really sounds like I love being nitpicky about this stuff, but I feel like these are conversations that do matter at the end of the day, just because how a team is composed, like, it will affect that. And these overlap of responsibilities, of course it happens in everything. One thing I will emphasize over the years, no matter what, is that you got to know the individuals directly. Everybody, you could take two engineer managers, and they'll be two completely different people just because of how they behave, how the characters are. And same thing for not just engineer managers, like individual contributors. They all have their own thing. Even though everybody loves writing code, they do a different way and they tackle problems differently. So one thing that over the years, at least working in software engineering, is I love taking the emphasis of knowing the individual first, because that impacts a lot how the synergy of a team works at the end as well. So many different nitpicky factors at the end, and we've only covered the individual contributors and EM. According to Addy, he's not part of the ICs, which I kind of agree with. If we just dive into, because that covers what, 80% of people, let's say. Out of 10 people, we've covered 7 ICs, 1 EMs, I think on average, that's fair. That kind of leaves only like 2 other individuals in this. So let's talk about that real quickly. One thing that I guess we could all agree on is that a PM or like a product owner or a project manager or a program manager, like these words kind of come up whenever we talk about composition of engineering teams. Let's dive a little bit deeper in terms of like what their role is and how important it is, or how unimportant some people think it is. What is a product manager to begin with?
So typically an IC on the product team that
manages the product. So like there's a lot of things that can go into that. They can manage the roadmap, determine what things to work on, prioritize work.
Yeah, I think that's a very general way of putting a product manager. Unfortunately, none of us are product managers or have been product managers, I don't think so. But we've definitely worked with a lot of teams that have at least one. Number-wise, is it fair to say that one PM per team, or?
Depends on how much product guidance you want to have. If there's enough product to, you know, kind of work on, maybe you want two people, but I find oftentimes you would still want those two people to almost be working on parallel path products.
Wouldn't that be a good reason to be splitting that team into two in that case?
Yeah, you can make an argument that it should be split up. Again, it really depends on what they're implementing and how intertwined like those products are. Potentially, it still makes sense to have a single team, but I think drawing like hard boundaries across all this stuff, most of the time it's not super discreet. It can be like very fluid.
And it also fluctuates. Sometimes the life cycle of an engineering team's grow and also like changes in size. When we're talking about like separating a team in two, you could be 10, and then next thing you know, you'll be like two smaller teams of six people because you got people that got split out but then added onto it. So same thing for PMs and other people that sometimes come and go into the team. That's a very good point that it fluctuates over the years. For the role of a PM though, if we look at this like ratio of one PM for let's say like seven individual contributors, what does the synergy of a PM do over the years? Because, you know, we've all got to work with it. I could probably describe, like, the best product manager I've ever worked with. That's one way that at least I love looking at it. I'm not calling out names. I'm not calling out names, though. But
name them right now.
It is a thing where it is important. Like, every engineering team out there has at least one individual who's responsible for a product. Product owner, product manager, however you want to call them, they're responsible for it. And the characteristics of why I think the best PM I've ever worked with is that there's always this extra step that they've done that technically it's not the typical responsibility for a product manager, but they've always done that step to cover it so that by the time the other members are looking at what needs to be done, there's a lot of like T's that are crossed and like the dot on the I's are taken care of. And like there's a list of items that they could do. For example, one communication between the PMs and the engineering. Let's talk about tickets, right? That's one very common way of people talk between the engineering team. The product will be speccing out some tickets and putting it out there, and engineers could look at it and that. The best product manager I've ever worked with has this framework of building out these tickets, and it was all clear. And like, if there's a section for resources, for example, it's always there. If there's a section for acceptance criteria, it's always there. If there's some section for any kind of extra information, tech-related information, it's always being thrown in there. So that's one way where if that individual, that PM is not doing it, who else is responsible for this kind of stuff? Of course, you could put it on the engineer, but having this centralized role definitely helps. So that's one of the experiences I've had over the years of seeing why a good product manager is required, a product owner is required. I kind of want to hear from your ends, though. What do you think over the years, you probably have worked on a team that kind of requires a PM, but what was your experience like having this individual on the engineering team?
I mean, generally, it's a good thing. Like, you need someone to project manage, whether it's an EM or a tech lead or a product manager. So someone just filling that role is important. And they're always typically a really good resource for ICs or just anyone on the team because they typically have the most context, which is why effective communication is super important, as you just highlighted.
And is it fair to say that the PMs are usually the people that talks to individuals outside of the engine team more often than everybody else?
Yeah, that's right. They're typically the bridge between engineering and the rest of the company.
What about your experience with product owners then?
I think for me, well, there are different like kind of responsibilities. PMs handle a lot of different things, but one of the main things that I find their role to be most valuable, at least for me, is that they are able to convey what actually needs to be built. So they go out and they talk to a bunch of whatever individuals they need. They get feedback from them. So they kind of synthesize all this context, boil it down to a few features, and then prioritize that among another set of features, and then eventually delegate those out to like the tech lead and discuss and say, you know, like how many of these can we actually get done? I do think like a product manager in my mind is mostly a person who decides what we should actually build. And then there's also like this project management dimension, which I think a lot of the PMs, at least at Notable, also do, which is like, what should we actually work on now that we have like a set of features that we want to build, mm-hmm. like, and how should we prioritize this among like this other set of things?
Yeah, those are all important responsibilities for sure. Because I mean, looking from a IC point of view, sometimes you're building stuff, but you don't always know why. And then sometimes the PM is a great resource to finding these reasons while we're building it. I mean, it's good that everybody should know that at all times, whatever, but it does happen where sometimes you'll be like, in the bigger picture, why is this important? Why is that not important? And these individuals, these PMs on teams do contribute some of that as well.
Well, I would argue, like, oftentimes, like, they should only convey just enough context for you to actually do your work. Of course, it's nice for you to ask and be curious about, like, why you're working on what you're working on, but oftentimes, like, when you're implementing something, like, it's not your responsibility to worry about, like, whether it's worth it to implement it. Like, you're assuming the person has already made, like, a very conscious, like, well-intentioned decision around that. So it's like, I could communicate you 100% of all this information, but if I could get away just communicating 20% of it, that's actually better, because it takes a lot more time to communicate all 100. And I think about that, like, and you see this between communication of a lot of different people. Like, a tech lead, they spend a lot of time thinking through a bunch of different scenarios, and they really synthesize it down to one. And then they just convey the one to you, and you trust that that one implementation is, like, what you should work on. And, of course, if you want to fill, like, eventually grow into a tech lead, you should understand how to make that decision. But at least for right now, for you to be effective in your role, they should really only just convey the one idea, if that makes sense.
No, for sure. Even, it's not really related, but sometimes when we talk about like separation of concerns, for example, like you mm-hmm. are supposed to be concerned about a certain thing and you don't have to worry about everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Over the years, I think for myself at least, I'm just a stupid curious person. Whether it's something that I'm not directly responsible for, like, impacting, I do like having a little bit more. And I do know that when I talk to at least product owners, they will have answers a little bit more expansive, whether it's related to what I need to do immediately or not. At least from my end, I find that slightly interesting over the years. So one thing that maybe you guys, I don't know if you have a full opinion on, is we've covered 9 individuals out of 10 already. I'm using like these numbers, but that's just the representation I have in my head at the moment. This one last slot. This is sometimes over the years you get a lot of people coming in and out. And one role that I want to emphasize a lot over the years that I cannot be more thankful for is designers. Anybody who's providing any kind of graphics. So let's say you got to build a feature of this experience on one of your apps of, let's say, like a checkout experience or whatever it is. A lot of times the visual designs are super important. And on many teams I've worked on, I've always had at least one designer that I get to work closely with their designs and implementing it and making sure that it passes not only the eye test, but the functionality behind it. So there are many teams out there that are very product and front-end focused that have this role. Sometimes whether it's a dedicated designer for this specific team only, or they have like a rotating designer that comes in and out. So I think over the years, I definitely want to give the importance on that. Do you guys have any experience working with designers, actually? I just want to hear your opinion on, if you haven't, what does it look from an outside? What do you think the synergy between the ICs and designers look like?
I mean, most of the roles I've worked in were typically back end, so I don't spend too much time with designers. But then I would imagine that most of the interactions between the designer and the rest of the team is typically with just the PM. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think like what you're kind of describing is like a UI UX designer, but I think the responsibility of designing something that's intuitive for other people to use, even as an engineer, you kind of take on that responsibility to a degree as an IC. Like, you should be writing code that has a good experience for other developers. So I think like a lot of people can kind of, you know, fold that responsibility into whatever they're working on, and they can also be cognizant of it, even if there isn't a dedicated person who's working on like designing. Because the interface of what you're working on or exposing to other people, it's not always just like, you know, some web UI, mm-hmm. right? It can also just be code. And I think, I guess to a degree, maybe like a tech lead is like a designer to a degree, because you're defining like the interface of which, like of some software module that other people will be using. And I think
I definitely agree the point with designer is a very generic term. That was my bad on that. The designer I was talking about, for sure, we're talking about product designers and graphic designers on that. And then the other side of designers is basically the architecture, the people that design how systems talk together. When we're talking about endpoints, what exactly you're expecting from that endpoint and how that's being built and everything. So designers are super, super important. For me, over the years, of course, the graphic product has been prominent there, but then the importance of also having this tech lead, this tech architect at the end of the day, just trying to give a little bit of structure in what's being built is just as valuable. But then we throw those into IC, so that's not its own little category in that aspect. One thing that has been more popular in the past couple of years, so we've kind of filled in our, you know, distribution, right? You got your ICs, you got your PMs, you got your designers that come in, and as I was saying, it's flexible, of course. One thing over the past years that has been quite important, actually, is data analysts or even data or data engineers. How does that fit in engineering teams? Would you consider that they should be their own team, like data engineers and data analysts should be their own teams? Or is it reasonable nowadays that you would have a team of individual contributors, you would have a PM in there, and then you also have included in that like a data analyst?
I think if you're structuring your teams as product teams, it makes sense to kind of fold in data analysts into that as well. And oftentimes I think they would just kind of feed information or insights to the PM, who would eventually synthesize that and make, you know, product specific decisions. Like, again, we should implement A, B, and C based off of, you know, what this analyst has found in the data.
That's totally true. And even, would you say that sometimes the data analyst responsibilities a bit spills over onto the ICs once in a while? Because I feel like over the years, I mean, I'm definitely not a certified data analyst, but I've had to be answering some questions that some data analysts, and we would not have a data analyst on the team, and that responsibility kind of gets thrown onto the individual contributors.
Yeah, again, if you kind of perceive titles as like bundles of responsibilities, I'm sure you could decouple some of it and throw it onto like an actual individual's plate. Really depends.
Andy, do you like or not like data analysts on teams?
I mean, they have their role in place, so I don't see any reason to not like them.
That's a fair point. And also, it was just a subjective thing, because depending on team and depending on whatever, you could also fit different stuff. So just wanted to point that at you. But yeah, I think, is there any other roles that, I mean, those are the ones that at least I see more common in a single engineering team. Are there any other roles that you guys have seen over the years of that could be part of an engineering team, aside from the ones that we listed, obviously?
I mean, there's a lot of roles out there.
That you could lob into an engineering team?
Like a product? Well, I think like the framework in which you've described a team is oftentimes around like a product-centric team. Like I said, there are other types of teams that mm-hmm. are more functional. Like this is less likely within like the modern product engineering team, but like there are QA people, there are technically test engineers, which are like slightly different than QA mm-hmm. people, because they actually maybe write tests and code. DevOps people, especially with the advent of a lot of like DevOps as a service, this has become less common, but this is also a role. Yeah, those are just some off the top of my head.
I'm so sorry that I disrespected all the QA people out there, because I have worked on a team where we had a dedicated QA person, and they've saved our ass so many times, and I'm so sorry. You guys are important out there. You guys are 100% crucial to teams as well, and I do know, yes, a lot of teams do have them include as part of the engineering teams, but also in other organizations, they would be their own entity. They'll be their own teams where you get to feed your feature or your product into that team as well.
So a more like functional team as opposed to a product.
Yeah. So sorry for that. I apologize for times.
Data engineering, that's also another one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right.
Now that you bring that up though, because another point that I wanted to put out there is that like we've covered most of what a product development team looks like, product engineering team look like. And then when we talk about the data engineering team, it's always interesting because they have their own pipeline that it got filled out. They have their own distribution. And then we talk about a security team and an infra DevOps team. They also have a whole thing. If we just take maybe like a quick 30 seconds, like just glance real quickly from a data engineering point of view, is it fair to say that they have sort of the same distribution in terms of, do they still require like a PM on that team as well? Or
I imagine so. They probably want some guidance. Again, that may be just a data engineer, or it could be a whole separate person who focuses on what they should actually be building out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the makeup that we discussed probably works for almost all teams. The only difference is just there's the skill set of the people on the team.
that's one thing that I was trying to relate to, is that like if you take out the well, we got this kind of mold of like 1 p.m., a bunch of individual contributors. If you take out the individual contributors, depending on their specialty, that's kind of like a, I guess, reusable model for different teams, right? Whether it's security or infra or data analysts, is that you would just replace the ICs with their expertise. This team is specialized in the web stack, so they would be building different features, blah, blah, blah. But then if you take another team, another data team, then you'll have your PMs, you would have... sometimes your data analysts, if they come in, but then you have like data engineers and they specifically work on a data pipeline, whether they build, you know, large warehouses and they get to move stuff together. And then when we talk about the site reliability team, instead of the ICs being specialized into web dev or data analysts, you just swap that out and you have these core individuals that are specializing in the site reliability, uptimes and making it more performant, read speed, all that kind of fun stuff. I think that's something that's very fascinating, and whenever somebody, I think, they try to build a new team, that's something maybe that they model after. Would you agree that's generally the case then, that we always think that the main ICs, whether they're specifically data, they're usually the core part of the team? I mean, they're the one consuming the most pizza at the end, is probably what I'm trying to say here.
I mean, I think probably for most cases, yes, but I would not say that it is a rule for all cases. Again, it's really depends on what that team's objective is. And again, if we kind of go back to like the theme of a two pizza team, it really does not prescribe like what that team is working on. So
it's definitely putting a size and then figuring out the goal at the end. So one of the last point I just want to go back real quickly is, I've asked this question before, is like, who is not part of a two pizza team? And then one thing that over the years I've noticed is, if we talk about from the engineering perspective, you have the ICs and then you have an engineering manager, but there are individuals like above an engineering manager. Is there a reason why they're not lobbed into the engineering team? I mean, it might be an obvious reason or not, but is there any pros of not having these individuals that are higher up than engineering managers, not directly within an engineering team?
Well, they might not be part of a product team specifically, but generally when you're like a manager of managers, like you still have your own team, you still have, you manage the managers, and that's still a team. And then that manager also belongs to like, it's their own individual team, which is why I said like there is overlap between teams. It's not completely discrete, like drawn out lines, like, oh, you never talk to anyone outside of like this team. Obviously there's like fluidity between teams, but you do want to kind of encapsulate, you know, what their objective is to a degree, so you're not constantly just trying to talk to everyone from every other team. Like, you do want to draw some kind of lines.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Just because, let's say, the team of engineering managers, they just have a different objective, they just have a different goal than the
all their objectives should fold into like an even greater goal, like, yeah, that manager, you know, they're responsible for that.
Andy, is there a reason why we don't have executives inside of engineering team, from your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, like, you basically want to empower your lower level managers to actually make decisions, and that's a good reason of removing your hands from like direct control or direct interactions with ICs or people on the team. Like, you want your manager to actually manage, and that's a little bit difficult when you're kind of breathing down their back.
Well, there's always these like straddling stories over the years that it's like, oh, look, Steve Jobs used to grab like individual contributors, like people that are just working on something, and grab them out directly and work on something completely different. And that's where the fun random anecdote that comes in. And even from, if you think about it, in that space where it's like, is it because Steve Jobs wasn't directly on that team or something? I think there is some parallel in terms of how some of the teams are, you know, distributed over the years of engineering. This has been great, just because there's so many different stuff that we could talk about more of how a team is composed at the end. But if we just look back real quickly, this is more like down memory lane. The best engineering teams you've ever worked on, what made them so special? How many individuals? I mean, you don't have to name people, Stan. We don't name people out here. but what made that team so efficient, special, memorable? Like, how big was the team and what do you remember of it?
I think just a team where communication cost feels very low. Where it's almost like your brain has expanded. Like, it's not very expensive to communicate with someone else and like collaborate. I think those are like the best engineering teams that I've worked on. In terms of the most productive, oftentimes I do think like the smaller the team, kind of the better, I think. Mm-hmm. So in my world, like an ideal engineering team size is probably around like, you know, 4 ICs at most.
Yeah, which is still part of the range as well. And I do agree that there's going to be slightly different dynamics if it's a 4 versus like 8 or 9, for example. So,
and these are like 4 people like actively like working on like something that's like very closely tied with each other. I think here at Notable, like we oftentimes, like once you're productive, like we kind of just put you in a single lane, and then you, even though you're on the same team, you guys are kind of all shooting for something different that's not necessarily always tied to like one of your peers' objectives.
Yeah, and I kind of like how there's just an underlying synergy. When you're talking about like the teams that you found productive and enjoyable on, is there's some kind of, I guess, understanding between all the engineers of like same wavelength, how to complete stuff, and that helps with the communication at the end of the day. So glad to hear that from your experience at least. But Andy, how about you in the past years of being engineers? What was, I guess, how big was a team that you just enjoyed working the most on, and what made it so enjoyable and memorable?
Basically the same thing as Stan, like any team that has effective communication where everything is transparent and information is readily accessible is generally a good team. Like I think that a good team isn't defined by the number of members in the team. Like if there's good management, then that number can be as high or low as possible.
And I think after all we said throughout this whole couple of discussion, I think that definitely echoes what we're trying to say. I could tell about my favorite team over the years that I'm just a person that I just love people's story more than anything. Of course, we're building stuff. Of course, we're accomplishing goals and everything. But some of the more memorable teams I've been on is because it's a composition of individuals that are not all the same. They always have something that somebody's good at, and they can always, you know, back on each other for doing something. And that's something that it's really hard. You can't read that straight from a CV or something like that. Those are the team that I know. I've had loads of fun with that kind of synergy. I know there's stuff that I wasn't as good at something, and somebody else could cover me on that. And then even just different characters. People are ridiculously funny. I think there was a period where it was just a team that everybody was just really enjoyable. And yeah, we all just got really along really well over the years. So at least that's my experience. Not super technical of an answer, but I think the human behind the engineer is super, super fun. But yeah, that covers basically the whole topic of two pizza teams at the end of the day. Hopefully a lot of people have learned a lot. Maybe in the future, if you get the chance to compose your teams, a lot of these factors will be taken into consideration. But at the end of the day, I personally enjoy this concept. I love talking about it. And yeah, I'll catch you guys on the next one.